Good morning and welcome to the Thursday, October 15th, 2009 edition of the Investigative Journal. I'm your host, Greg Szymanski. You're listening to LibertyRadioLive.com. My guest today is John Pugh. He's a member of the Alamo Ministry, and on Thursdays I revisit this story. In about 2 weeks, the children who have been kidnapped by the state, and I say that fully meaning that word, will have a hearing to determine their fate, whether they are going to be adopted out. It will affect about 15 to 16 of the 35 children. The others had their hearings and are either in independent living or are in foster care right now and have not been returned to the Alamo Ministry based on the fact that the government, through the court system, is stating that they have not complied. First of all, they took these kids in a raid over a year ago. I'm just reiterating the story for anyone who hasn't heard about it. They claimed that there was abuse going on in the Alamo Ministry. Now, there's never been any abuse ever shown in any evidence given, and the state is basically trying to disrupt this ministry based on its religious principles and its fact that they also criticize the beast in Revelations being the Vatican and also its close follower, the United States government. And so when you criticize these two organizations, expect to have your ministry raided if you're out there and you want to talk about the truth. That's exactly what happened. So here's, again, the story. They've said now, the state, the only thing they could find was that, one, the children were medically deprived because they weren't vaccinated. Now, in Arkansas, there you don't have to get vaccinations. There are exemptions to that. We talked about that yesterday on the show, so they didn't violate that. And then yesterday I made an error, and I stated that the state stated they didn't have their proper home schooling credentials. Now, I've been notified by the ministry, and I never knew this, that they didn't even violate this. Now, listen to this. This makes it even worse. The case of the government even gets more flimsy. Now, listen to this. And here's a note from the Alamo Ministry, and let me read it to let you know that I want to correct this, because with everything going on, we missed this one point. And yesterday, Greg said that DHS is using educational neglect because our kids were homeschooled without proper registration. This is incorrect. We never, and this is from the ministry, homeschooled the children. They were in a private church school which needs no government approval in Arkansas. Our teachers are not required to be state certified. Private Arkansas schools are perfectly within the law. There are only very minor rules which we comply with, such as a flag in the school, which we had, the ministry said, fire drills, which we had, doors being unlocked, all which we fully complied with. So I'm asking, where is the educational deprivation? In fact, one of the children now in foster care has been declared a National Honor Student, and she just didn't get that from a few months away from the Alamo Ministry. It's just a travesty of justice. We know what they're doing behind the scenes. And so, again, let's talk, the ministry says, if we had homeschooled, yes, we did that and registered. But as private schools running for 3 decades now they've been doing this for 3 decades. We were fulfilling all requirements of the state. Never were we questioned since the school was opened in 1979. So that's just one thing I wanted to clear up. Today I have John Pugh on. He's from the Alamo Ministry. Let me check to see if John's here. John, are you there? Good. I'm glad you're back. John was with us before. He's a young member of the Alamo Ministry. And I think it might be worthwhile, John, to let people know who you are, how you got involved with the ministry, before we get into discussions about the upcoming hearings coming up in the both cases of Tony, who's in jail, and also the children. Go ahead. You know something? I've just been notified, John. You stay on the line here. For some reason, you're audio is not coming through, at least from Tom. I've got a note from Tom Fress. What I'd like you to do, can you hang up the phone and call back on this, first on 3553 instead of 3883. Let's see if that comes through, okay? This happens on my show a lot, and I don't know why, but it's getting awfully frustrating from my point of view. Could you do that for me? And we'll start again. This happens way too much on my show. And I don't know whether it's a technical end on that phone call or whatever, but I just wanted to be aware. John, are you there?
Yeah. Does that work better?
Okay. Okay. Now you're fine. So I guess, there's something wrong with 3883. Did you dial 3883 or 3993?
It was 3883.
Okay. For some reason, well, now you're on 3553, so it's coming through. Okay, let's go back and repeat that question so that people can listen to what you said. Okay, tell us again who you are, how you got involved with the ministry, and we'll start there. Go ahead.
The way I got involved through the ministry was through, there was a brother on the streets of Hollywood Boulevard who was, as people are taught when they come to the church, to win souls, to testify the Lord Jesus Christ and his saving power. And there was a brother doing that on the streets of Hollywood, and over a period of about a month and a half, his words really cut into my soul. Eventually I came up to the church, and I got saved on August 14th of 2007 at the ministry. I moved in that night, and I've been associated with the church ever since.
Okay. Now you've been with that ministry for how long now?
A little over 2 years.
Okay. You've seen this, let's talk about the education of these kids, like you did earlier. People didn't hear that. Tell us about what goes on, because I did clear up this about the homeschooling issue. It's really a private school in Arkansas that was complying with state law. These kids are well educated, correct? You've seen it firsthand. Tell us about that.
Well, anytime, I kind of work in the kitchen here out in Texarkana, and, you know, the kids would come in for lunch, or they come in the morning for breakfast. And, you know, you hear the conversations, of course, they're talking about what's going on in school. These kids are on a higher level. Most of the kids are finishing school ahead of time because they're meeting the criteria of the curriculum. And to hear what the media is saying about the educational neglect and how these people haven't been properly educating their children, but then to sit and talk to the children, like you pointed out, one of these kids is a National Honor Society. She's been recommended for the National Honor Society. That doesn't just happen. You know, from a couple months in a public school system. Anyone who knows anything about the public school system knows that they're very lacking in the education that they provide for people. So it's an apparent fact that it had to have come from the education she received here. And you've had other people in this ministry who grew up here and were educated here their entire lives. They've done interviews with you, and I know you've talked to them, I believe, outside of interviews, and I'm sure you noticed that they're highly educated. They're far from stupid.
Yeah, you know, I've had people on from every one of your ministries in New York. I've had them on from California, from Arkansas, and the same story rings true. The thing that really I wanted to impress upon the listeners is that any type of reports of abuse from Child Protective Services, any type of reports of abuse or strange things happening from the mainstream media and even the Arkansas papers has been orchestrated. And the reason it has is I really think it's a sad case when a journalist like myself, who has very little resources, takes the time over a period of years to get to know this ministry. And I'll tell you this right now. If I thought in my heart there was anything going on that was reported as true in those papers, I would be the first one to talk about it. And what I have found is that it's a complete, utter lie. And people believe these lies, just like they believe many other lies that have been told to the American people for hundreds of years. And so I wanted to set the record straight. For anyone who takes the time to listen, takes the time to listen to you, what you're going to say today, because I want you, from your own experience, to tell us really what you've seen over 2 years. But I'm saying this. It's a very sad commentary when a person like me has to look into this and tell the people what's really going on when, in fact, authorities that we give this power to have turned a blind eye, and they're shutting this ministry, trying to shut this ministry down based on lies because they are told to do it. And who is telling them to do it is what the American people need to find out, because if you start walking up that evil ladder, you are going to find out some truths that are going to shake your conscience. Truths that your ministry, and I really have always admired the courage of people in your ministry to pass out these brochures that actually indict the real problem at the top, and that's the Vatican-led New World Order. And it's not a popular message, but I believe that is even echoed in the Bible, that the truth is never popular, that the righteous will be persecuted, and that what seems to be white is black. And I think your ministry isn't afraid to do that. It's one of the few right now in this country, because the rest of them have sold out to Rome. Now, I preface that with a huge, huge commentary, but I want to get your opinion of a lot of things, John, and you're quite articulate. But tell us your whole thoughts about this whole thing. First, Tony's arrest. Second, the incarceration of these kids. Third, how it affects you personally, and also the people in your country that you live in. What is going to happen to this country if we don't deal with this issue before us now? Go ahead.
Well, it's a very, very important thing that America wakes up, that the world at large wakes up to what's really going on. I think the main thing that this Vatican-led New World Order is focusing on and what they're betting on is that the American people will not look into anything, that they'll just take everything at face value because that's what this generation has really been raised to do. You know, with Tony's arrest, it's just amazing to me how, people never saw it coming, you know, as far as out in the world. I mean, here in the ministry, we expect persecution to come, and we don't know how it's going to come. We just know that the Lord is always there to deliver us. But people out in the world acted like it was this big shocking thing, this big shocking scandal. But when you're attacking the Vatican, like our pastor has continuously attacked the Vatican and pulled the curtain back so that people could see who's really manipulating the events and the things that are going on in the world, it's only a matter of time and, you know, before something is going to happen, you know, before they're going to retaliate. And it's something that we've seen before in other ministries and stuff where the Vatican has had their hands and obviously had some kind of success. And obviously, I heard you mention in another interview, I believe it was with Alberto Rivera, you know, about how look what happened to him. You know, he was exposing the Vatican. Keith Green, he was exposing the Vatican. But, you know, these things aren't really published abroad. People don't really realize what they were doing that lines up with their mysterious deaths that were far from being caused by natural causes. And, you know, to see what has happened with the arrest of these kids is just, it makes you sick to your stomach, to be honest with you, Greg. It makes you sick to your stomach because, you know, these are all people that I know personally. These are all faces that I remember seeing. These are all people I've had conversations with. You know, some of these kids are kids that I've read the Bible with. And, you know, you think about what they're going through. You think about what their parents are going through while you sit here and you talk to them and you fellowship with them. And you know that it's all based on some filthy, dirty lies, and it just makes you sick to your stomach to know that people just believe it, you know, and they just take it at that face value. We go out and we pass out the literature. We pass out the literature in Texarkana, and, you know, which is kind of like ground zero for everything that's going on. And we get all kinds of responses. We still get positive responses, but, you know, we also get a lot of negative responses. But we're going to be obedient to the Lord, and we're going to go out and witness and testify, and we're going to let people know the truth of what's going on. But it's amazing how many people will get in your face. They'll throw the literature at you. They'll act like they want to get into some kind of a physical altercation with you, but they will not, under any circumstances, come up to the ministry, sit through a service, hear the doctrine of the church, hear what's going on, and see for themselves. They don't want to do that. They just want to take whatever the media is going to feed them, and that's the truth, and that's all that they care about. Sometimes they don't even want to read the literature with the other side of the story. And it's just an amazing thing how people are just so closed-minded. Well, they heard it on TV, they read it in the newspaper, and that's it. And it says a lot about the country. It says a lot about where people are in America right now and where their heads are at. You know, the Word of God says that in the last days, in the book of Revelation, it says Satan would be given a mouth. You know, and his mouth is definitely the media. I mean, our pastors taught us that. You've talked about that on your radio program as well. But, you know, it also talks about in the book of Revelation those who be cast in the fire, and one of those people that it classifies as those who love it and make it a lie. And they're going to have to stand before the Lord on Judgment Day, and I don't really think that they can grasp in their carnal minds that what that means to stand before the Lord and knowing that you've lied against people who truly love him and people who are truly serving him and people who are truly keeping his commandments. You know, we're not their enemies. We're probably the best friends they have in the entire world because we're trying to tell them the truth. But as far as they're concerned, you know, we're devils. We're devils. And it's just a shame because it shows the ignorance of America right now to know the truth.
Yeah, and you know what I wanted to bring up just for our listeners, and a good thing I think for you to do also, if you haven't had a chance, John, and some of the members of your ministry, is to really understand, you know, in the Bible believing community, there are many people on your side. And when I say that when because I've talked to some that are. And some of the people that we need to address, and I'm going to contact this gentleman today because he's a good friend of mine, a brother in Christ. And for those of you listening, listen to me carefully. Now, when you look at the Alamo ministry and other ministries like that, there are few and far between. They preach exactly what the Protestant, regarding the Vatican, they preach exactly what the Protestant ministers in this country back in the early 1900s and late 1800s were preaching from most every pulpit in this land. Now, that's not just coincidence that Protestant churches now have aligned with Rome. It is their hidden plan, Alberto Rivera, former Jesuit priest, has told us that, to infiltrate these churches. Now, recently, the Pope has former Pope John Paul II stated that anyone doesn't come into line with them will be taken care of. And he said it in kind of the typical Vatican words of wisdom, and it sounded real good. But basically, he was saying all these splinter groups are what we worried about because really the Protestants are in our pocket anyway. And we're going to take care of them. We'll give them a warning. If they don't come into our side and stop talking bad about us, we'll make sure they shut down, and we're going to use the United States government to do that. And that's exactly what he said. His words were cloaked in words of that sounded much different, but that's his meaning, and we know that. Now, secondly, I was a Catholic, and I had to come to terms with this. There is a gentleman by the name of Richard Bennett who comes on my show, John, and he's a former Catholic priest for over 25 to 30 years. And he's not alone. He left the Catholic Church, is now a born-again Christian. And guess what? He has a website called BarianBeacon.org. You must go there. He talks about the recent Pope's encyclical, which echoes exactly what you're saying and is warning Americans that the Vatican's worldwide goal is to take over to lead us down a one-world government, a one-world religion path that is going to be worshiping Lucifer behind the scenes. Now, here's a Catholic priest, folks, who knows this. He has no reason to do anything but tell the truth. Now, if you don't believe the Alamo ministry and you're a Catholic out there, go to these websites. Start reading about some of the people that really know the truth. He worked in the Vatican. He knows what they're doing behind the scenes. John, I can't understand why people don't believe even that. That's what makes this such a real interesting story. Because people are so propagandized that they can't even get it. When they listen to a former priest tell us, it doesn't sink in. What's your thoughts on that? We have a minute before the break, then we'll come back for another half hour.
Well, I think the reason that is because once people come to a certain knowledge of the truth, Greg, then they are at a crossroads. They're either going to completely ignore the truth that they've been presented to them, or they're going to have to do something about it. And, you know, who can make war with the beast? Is what it says in Revelations, and I think that a lot of people, it bears witness with their soul. I think they hear some of these things, and I think it really cuts them deep because it bears witness with their soul, but they don't know what to do, and they feel like they'll be powerless against it because they don't have the Lord living in them, and they don't have the blood of Christ applied to their soul, so they don't know that they're more than conquerors through Christ that strengthens them, and that's the bottom line. They don't have the Lord to lean on. But it's so many things bear true. I mean, you know how many people I've had told me before I was even in the ministry that, did you know the Catholic Church is the most, is the richest organization in the world? I mean, that's a common fact. You know, why do you think they have all this money? What do you think they're funding with it? What do you think they're spending all these billions of dollars on? You know, they have their own agenda. they have their own agenda, they have their own hierarchy, they have their own monarchy within that church, you know, and or cult, excuse me. But, you know, that's what it is. People don't want to deal with the real situation.
Yeah, and we're going to deal with it in the next half hour. I appreciate your thoughts, John. And let me just mention that we're talking to John Pugh. He's a member of the Alamo Ministry. We're going to be back with John and discuss some things in particular about what's happening in Texarkana right now. And also, I want you to remember, my show comes on in the afternoon and also in the evening. So if you didn't get this broadcast, if you're not listening now, tell your friends. You can catch it in the afternoon, as well as other shows like Tom Press's Inquisition Update. Don't miss that one. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
Nobody knows where we are now. I long to hear, I need to see. Could I shed tears to many?
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States in 1963.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no secret is revealed. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. I am asking your help and the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President today.
You were both in Skull and Bones, the secret society.
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
I've got a vision for what I want to do for the country. See, I know exactly where I want to lead. It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for...
Okay, we're back, and we're discussing the Alamo case with John Pugh, a member of the ministry. And, you know, John, we've, on this show at least, I've gone over numerous times the irregularities of the Tony Alamo trial, also the irregularities of how he was arrested on violations of the Mann Act. I've had on FBI agents, well, John Peeler in the past, who has testified that he was put up by the FBI to frame Tony back in the 90s. There's also testimony of others who talk about the same type of situation in the 80s. And I then tried to tell people that there was never any, during these other attacks, any insinuations of any type of abuse of children, any child molestation, any violations of federal Mann Act laws, taking children across state lines. And when these latest charges came up from some disgruntled members of the ministry, many irregularities have been shown. Now, the point I'm trying to make is, if they've tried to frame Tony in the past for over 30 years, why would that change now? And if they really were mounting a fair investigation of some irregularities, these child abuse charges would have came up long before their recent charges. And I believe that their recent charges have been trumped up just like the other ones. And the past history of this ministry shows that to be a case. It was never looked into by the press. It was never looked into by the authorities. It was never looked into because they have been told to bring this ministry down one way or the other, and now they're doing this. Now, I even talked to a guy who's a New York police detective who discussed this with me, and he was probably one of the most influential men around the country looking into pedophile rings, child abuse, cults, things like that for 30 years, this man, and he's still doing it today. And I asked him on the air and off the air, I said, Jim, his name's Jim Rothstein, and he's not afraid to talk about how Cardinal Spellman, one of the most powerful men in America, was a pedophile. And he had evidence of that. And you know, Spellman never spent one day in jail. And the man probably raped and abused so many kids that it isn't even funny. And Jim Rothstein knew it. And this is before your time, John, but they used to call it Spelly's War. That was Vietnam. And why would they call it Spelly's War if this man wasn't an influential man in our country? I'll tell you what. This story just upsets me so much to see how they frame Tony and then how people don't even come to his assistance in the Christian community. Now, I wanted to get your comments about this because you've known the man. And I've talked to people. Just let me finish about Rothstein. Rothstein said, look, I'm telling you what. I've never heard anything regarding the Alamo ministry or Tony Alamo over the years regarding any type of pedophilia, any kind of irregularities. And let me tell you, Greg, I would have known because I searched under every rock in every state of this country to try to uncover this problem. And where it led was to the Vatican and to the highest members of our government. So, John, with that ammunition, tell us what you know about Tony Alamo. And maybe we can really get some people to listen for a change.
Well, I know for a fact that any of these allegations against Tony are totally not true. I had a privilege before he was in jail of having contact with him on a regular basis, on a daily basis, multiple times a day. I lived with his kids, you know, personally. So, you know, I was roommates with them. I was also roommates with Spencer Ondersak, who's one of the people who is alleging that he was abused while he was in the ministry. So these are people that I didn't just know. These are people that I lived with. This is a family that's very close to me. This is my pastor, who is someone I respect and admire very, very much, you know, because of who he is, because I know him personally. This isn't just someone that I've heard about that I've never met. This is someone who I consider a very, you know, close personal friend of mine. And you know, he's done a lot for me, and he's never pulled any punches. And the reason, you know, of what I believe, and I believe it's true, as far as the reason why they're coming at him this angle this time, is because, I got the other phone ringing. This is just the devil right here.
Don't worry about it. I have distractions all the time during the show, so you get kind of used to it. Do you want to take that call first?
No, it's not important. The reason that I believe that they're doing it is because it's the Scarlet Letter. It's today's Scarlet Letter, all right? If they go ahead and put allegations of this nature against somebody, that's all they have to hear. People aren't going to ask any questions. People don't care if you break the rules. People don't care what you say. If it's someone that you accuse of a sexual crime, of some kind of rape, that's all that they care about. That's all that they care about. They don't care if you break all the rules, if you throw the book at them. Whatever you have to do to send him to jail, it doesn't matter. That's why the jury sent that question to the judge. You know, he's not guilty, but can we convict him anyway?
And I've had some legal experience, and that is a question I pondered a long time. If I was in that position, how would I answer that question? And that, I'm coming with a law school education, so I'm not probably educated just as well as any one of those judges on that stand. And probably haven't been tainted like them, having to compromise their decisions based on politics and a Vatican agenda. So I'm saying, let's pose the question, and even if you don't, if you have legal knowledge, fine. If you don't, how would you answer this just in layman's terms? The jury comes back in the Tony Alamo case, and the head juror states to the judge, "Your Honor, if we can't find any evidence that Tony transported minors across state lines for illicit purposes, which is really what the man the charge was, can we still convict him?" And my answer was very simple. Without even having to think about it, I would say, no, you can't, because the charges have not been proven. Plain and simple. Now, if you don't have any legal knowledge, you'd say something like, well, no. I mean, if he's not guilty of that crime, how can you convict him? I mean, it makes no sense. But what does the judge say? In his shrewd kind, he can't say, well, yes, you can convict a man even though he's not guilty. Go ahead and do it. This is a kangaroo court, and I've got to get you, I'm so hoping that you come back with a guilty plea, and we've tried to really set this whole thing up so you can't do anything else. He says something very shrewd. He says, basically, well, just read my jury instructions, which is skirting the issue and basically telling them yes in his own kind of sly way, and then they come back with a guilty verdict. I can't figure this out, John. That's a good point. What do you think?
Well, you know what I think is that, you know, the verdict was already in before, as soon as the trial started. You know, here in Texarkana, I don't know how they could have come to the assumption that he could have had a fair trial in Texarkana of all places. I mean, you're a lawyer. I know I've heard of many cases where lawyers will put in some kind of a motion for a trial to move the trial to somewhere else where they can get a more impartial jury. These people here in Texarkana have been against the ministry for a long time. And, you know, here they had a chance, and they wanted to make Tony Alamo guilty. And that's what they went to do when they went to those deliberation rooms. They went in there, and they're like, there's no evidence of what he's been accused of. How are we going to be able to get him in jail? And finally they said, well, hey, let's ask the judge. Let's consult with the judge. And they sent that letter to the judge. And the judge didn't want to say yes or no. He just said, read the instructions again, which is the same as saying yes. It's the same as saying yes. And, you know, and to have that be an actual fact, a documented fact, that that was a note from the jury to the judge, and yet they denied his motion for a new trial, you know, not to be thrown out. He just wanted a new trial. And to have them, you know, toss that motion out and deny that motion is just, it really tells you what's going on here. It really tells you what time it is and the things and the events that are going on with this trial. It was all set up from the beginning. There's no way that Tony Alamo was going to get a fair trial, especially here in Texarkana. That's why they brought the charges they brought against him, as I said before, because once you have someone who's labeled as a sex offender, the world don't care what you do to him. If they, you tell him that, tell them that he's raping little kids, they're like, you know what? Do whatever you want to do with that guy. Break whatever rule you got to do. Get him in jail. And that's the mentality that they had, and that's the mentality that they used. You know, they got these people stirred up like a mob, and they took full advantage of it, and no one cares if he's innocent or whatever. They're like, whatever, he's a child molester, keep him in jail. I don't care what rules they broke.
Well, I believe that at this point, Tony's best case scenario is an appeal, and this has to be done quite carefully and quite, it has to be done right, is what I'm saying. And my concern is that every, you know, I was talking about this case with a couple other lawyers who've represented people in these same situations, and I said, give me your comments. I know we don't have the transcripts, but you've read a lot about what I've read about his defense, and what would you say about it? And here's what one attorney told me. He said, listen, he said, I know the original attorneys were probably in their pocket. The defense didn't really mount enough investigation early, and that really is the key. And then he said, listen, anytime you have a traditional lawyer try a non-traditional offense in a traditional court, it's going to backfire. Now, I said, what do you mean by that? And he started telling me some things. I need to get the transcript, because that is a key fact to what happened here. Because there were some non-traditional things done in a traditional court that I think shouldn't have been done. And I think if this case would have been really tried, really based on, and done with proper investigations in the beginning, which I think was lax on the part of the attorneys. And I think any time you get attorneys emailing back and forth with people, that they're in the pockets of the other side. And Kuhn came in, and I think he came in too late. And although I respect some of the things he has done for the children and everything, I think he was involved too late. And it just showed me how disorganized that defense team was, because you don't bring an attorney in the last minute and he's your lead man. You got to have a case started right from the beginning, done with proper investigation. You know, I got this from a couple of policemen too. I said, "Man, you got to get investigators out there. I mean, you got to really do your homework to really pick apart this defense and use a traditional offense, base it on the law and what they're saying." And I think there was a lot. There were some things that strayed from that, and I think it hurt. That's just my opinion. We can look back as Monday morning quarterbacks, but the facts are he's been convicted and he's facing a life sentence, and I believe this appeal needs to be handled, I mean, with the utmost of care. And I believe if you guys ever get, John, just pass this along to the ministry, a copy of that transcript, please. I'd like to see it. It's public record, but I'd like to get a hold of that just for my own viewing, if that's possible. Okay.
Yeah, that's no problem.
Okay, well, tell me what you think, because I know this is difficult, but it's really important that, you know, I can't, you know, I always said this from the beginning, I can't believe this trial is going to go on in Texarkana, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing that was allowed to happen. Personally, it's something that I don't understand, but, you know, there's many other aspects of the case and everything, and like you said, one of the things that stuck out with me as far as the investigations go, and it's a point that I wanted to get across today on your show. One of the alleged victims, the girl, I believe her story made international papers. You know, of course, that whole shower scene.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I happen to be very close friends with her family. Now, as you know, and as I said before on your show, when I left the ministry for a brief period back in April of 2008,
mm-hmm.
she contacted me while she was still in the church. And then she left the church and stayed in contact with me. And she actually admitted to me herself that nothing had ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a verbatim. She told me nothing had ever happened, because I really asked her. I questioned as far as why she would leave the church, because she had her father was still there and her brothers and sisters, and it didn't make sense to me why someone would leave the ministry while their whole family was there. So I was really wondering if something had happened, and she spent a lot of time at Tony's house, and she told me that nothing had ever happened. And she was like, "No, nothing like that." That was, you know, because I did ask her if something happened along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
She told me verbatim, "No, nothing like that." And then she was one of the most instrumental witnesses that the FBI used to get these kids taken away.
Now, why do you think she changed her story and lied? What do you think went on?
Well, the reason I think that happened is I believe her mother was put out of the ministry briefly before that for drug use. She was using prescription painkillers. We have there's a sister in the ministry who has severe pain problems. She stole pain pills from her as she was taking them. So she got put out of the church for that. Of course, we don't allow anything like that in the ministry. You know, we don't allow drug use here, no weapons, no guns. We're just doing our best to create a safe environment. So when we find out something like that is going on, we ask people to leave. So that's what happened. And I believe that her mother had an axe to grind. Her aunt and uncle had left the ministry as well. I believe they had an axe to grind with the ministry. And they were very instrumental by the FBI. And I'm sure that once the FBI approached her parents, her mother, and her aunt and uncle, that mm-hmm. was all the influence that she needed. You know, she was here you have a young girl who grew up in a church environment, you know, a very positive environment. You know, we keep all the evil things of the world that you would see, all the secular television and all these things like that. You know, they're not exposed to that environment. And all of a sudden, here you have a teenage girl out in the world, and the FBI throwing all kinds of these gifts and cell phones and new clothes and TVs and all these things, you know, telling you about college and everything, and just throwing it at you. So
here's a point I want to make, too, a legal point here. Okay, what you just told me was never even tried, was never even attempted by the defense team to get into the record. Now, I know what the defense team is going to think. They're going to say, well, we got to overcome the hearsay, hearsay here, third-party testimony. John heard her say this. That's, objection, Your Honor. Here, well, I don't care about the hearsay objections here. We're going to try to get it in by one way or another, and we're going to get John's testimony in about what this girl told him one way or the other. We're going to try. It was never even tried, was it?
No, it wasn't. There was absolutely no attempt at all. And in fact, as you know, when I left the ministry, I was incarcerated for 10 months after that for something that happened back when I was 19, a drug-related offense with marijuana. But when I get out, I get an email from this girl. Now, I had no idea. This was before the raid was the last time I had talked to her. I had no idea that she had any involvement with it, that she had any testimony at all. She just got in contact with me. She sent me an email. And then I found out that she was involved in this investigation. And I started telling her, I was like, you told me nothing happened. I was like, how are you going to go and call yourself a Christian and stand before court and before God, you know, say something that you know is false about your pastor, about this man who's done nothing but good for you and your family? I was like, how can you do that? And she really didn't have a whole lot to say. And we kind of ended I ended the conversation there. And then I received another email from her saying that she didn't want to talk to me anymore. She had a whole lot of things going on. And I'm convinced because of the involvement that she had with the FBI, and because, you know, as you know, they did approach me while I was in jail, and I shunned them.
Yeah, they tried to get you to lie, didn't they?
Yes, they did. They tried to get me to lie for them. And they offered me, you know, they tried to bribe me to lie and falsely testify against the pastor. So,
and that should have been brought up in court. That could have laid some doubt on anybody else's testimony. There's no hearsay evidence there. We could even get the guy who tried to tell you to lie on the stand. That's what I mean by a traditional defense.
Exactly. And I'm totally convinced that once they realized, because I'm sure they were monitoring her phone calls, especially if they're the ones who got her the cell phone. So I'm sure that once they realized that she had, through emails, was in contact with me, that they wanted to stop that immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
That's what I'm convinced happened. You know, they just, you know, they took advantage. Here they are. They take a young girl. They throw the world at her. All these, you know, nice things. And, you know, but she was slated to actually testify in the trial against the pastor. And she freaked out. She actually ran away. She didn't want to testify.
Okay.
She ran away.
She never did testify.
She never did testify. She testified in the juvenile court to get the kids removed from the homes, but she never testified in the criminal trial against the pastor.
Okay. Now, we also have other evidence that some of the people that did testify, I think there were four or five of them, weren't telling the truth as well, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
So,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay. One of them was... that I know of, I don't know what role he actually, like I said, I haven't followed the transcripts of the trial either myself, but the one known as Spencer Ondersack, he's 19 now, who alleges this physical abuse by John Colbeck, who's a member of the church as well as our pastor. You know, like I said, I was his roommate. I lived with him. I lived with him, during the times that, you know, these alleged abuses happened, and they didn't happen. Anyway, you know, the ironic thing is, anyone who, if you've ever met Spencer, he is not a little guy. He's bigger than myself. You know,
mm-hmm.
He's a very, you know, physically fit, large guy. He's the kind of, you know, he's the kind of guy who, like, you know, he says he got abused. You look at him, you're like, why'd you let it happen?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
why do you think he lied?
He had an axe to grind. Basically, I'll be honest with you, I left the ministry. When I left the ministry, this girl who testified, she left the ministry to get in contact with me. That's the reason she left, and he left the ministry to get in contact with her. So that's the reason he left. He left.
Well, I mean, your testimony that they tried to get you to lie.
Yeah.
When you were arrested in custody, we went over that. On another show. Now we have this other girl. I mean, this is all stuff that needs to come out to let the jury know, hey, listen, there's a pattern here going on. Now, if they did it to you and others, don't you think they might do it to the four or five people that got to lie?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I know one of the girls they talked to over 80 times. Mm-hmm. They talked to her over 80 times. Why would they have to talk to anybody over 80 times? That doesn't even make sense. I know I've done investigations for a brief period when I was in the military as a military intelligence soldier. You know, and you're talking about things that have a top secret clearance that, you know, can possibly be of national security. And we never talk to anyone over 80 times.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just amazing. In the few minutes we have left, let's switch gears here. Talk about the kids' hearing coming up. In your mind, is there any way that these kids are going to get back to their children, I mean, to their parents?
Well, of course, there's always a way. The way is Jesus Christ. You know, he, nothing is beyond him. You know, this is all, we have to remember, he's the one who's really controlling everything. He's the one who allows the devil to be able to make his moves. He's also the one who can stop the devil and bring about deliverance. So to really say if that's going to happen, I don't know, because who knows the mind of the Lord. But I do know that if the government has their way, that they're not. This is all a joke to them. You know, I'm very close friends with one of the parents. And I've gone with him when he had a couple of his staffing meetings at the DHS building, and just the stuff that he tells me that happens there, you know, they're sitting around a table, drinking coffee, laughing. It's just another day at the office. To them, it's not a very serious matter whatsoever. And they take pleasure in what these parents are going through. They really take pleasure in, you know, these kids are going to get adopted out. The rights are going to get terminated. And as far as they're concerned, that's it. You know, you didn't comply with the order. You didn't move out of the church. You didn't find employment away from the church. You know, you don't care about your kids. Neither do we. We're going to adopt them out. You know, and that's what they're looking for. You know, they're just going to adopt the kids out if they have their way, if the Lord doesn't intervene. I don't really see, I don't think of any of those people who are involved in this case. I believe they were handpicked because they had things against the ministry. I believe they were handpicked.
Yeah, and tell us what's going on now. We've got to try to do something in the final hours here before, at least to let the public know what's going on. We can contact, one of the things that upset me tremendously is that these kids were illegally vaccinated with the swine flu vaccinations, which are very dangerous. And I was talking to a homeopathic doctor, someone who deals in this, and stated that we still can reverse those effects with some homeopathic treatment, which is purely herbal and could help these kids if we could get them back with their parents. And I'm really concerned about their lives and their futures, because they're being pumped with all this toxicity, plus their minds are being twisted by the state, and it's a travesty of justice. And let's try to do anything, even if we have to all get together and rally out in Texarkana. I'm willing to help organize that from this end. And if you guys at the ministry could help me, pass it on, okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, John. I want to thank you for coming on. And, of course, spread the word. I'll have more people on next week. And let's talk again, okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, that was John Pugh from the Alamo Ministry. I want you to go to their website, Alamo Ministries. Just Google that. You can get there, and you can read about the whole story from their point of view as well, and not just the propaganda coming out of the mainstream media. Many of you out there know the mainstream media is corrupted. Why do you believe them in this story? That's my question to you this morning. Hey, don't miss Tom Fresh's show right after mine, the Inquisition Update. And also, Nicholas has a great show after on Liberty Radio. Back tomorrow morning.